Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, and welcome back to Lovecraft Country Critical. We are back for episode two, Whitey's on the Moon. I've been listening to Magic Radio, and they're celebrating Whitney Houston this week, so I get confused.
What's she doing up there?
But even more exciting to celebrate, we've got a fan critical full house today.
Oh my god.
So I am joined by Lucy.
Hello.
Gaz down under.
Good morning.
John.
Yeah.
Len.
Hello.
And me, Emma, your host. This is very exciting. Emma. We haven't all been together since
Endgame.
I'd say Avengers Endgame. That's how long.
Probably. So last summer. It's been over a year since we've all been on a podcast together. This is very exciting. Anyway.
Amazing.
We are here today not to talk about the reunion of the full crew of Fan Critical, but to talk about episode two, Whitey's on the Moon, not Whitney Houston. So you will hopefully have already listened to our episode one coverage of Sundown, where we talked about the first episode of the HBO series Lovecraft
Good podcast,
Country,
by the way,
which
guys.
I struggle to say.
Good pod.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Lucy.
Yeah, there you go.
What's the only thing that could make it better?
Me.
Add Lucy in there.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. So we are going to cover this episode in our usual structure. So we're going to talk about kind of overview, what do we think, what were our blueberries, most importantly. Then we will go through the plot. Then we're going to take a little trip to Cthulhu Corner with maybe a bit of Lovecraft Lounge from Gaz before we leave you gagging for next week's coverage. Seeing as you weren't here for the preview pods or the first, Lucy, please tell us all what you thought of this episode, explain the blueberry system, and give us your score.
God, that's a lot for a first time back. briefly, I enjoyed the first episode a lot, just to give a bit of context. This one kind of split me a little bit, like opinion-wise.
Mm.
A lot of it reminded me of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. It gave me that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Which, I love that show, but that's not what I really want from this show. The ending was a bit of a sucker punch, not going to lie. So I'll go on to what the blueberry scale actually is. So that is how we rate what we review. And we go from 0 to 5, 0 being the worst, 5 being the best. And I'm going to give it 3 because it was giving me sort of monster of the week. A little bit silly. I found it a little bit silly at times, although there were some bits that were quite like horrifying. It's just the robes and the magic for me. A bit Sabrina, not in a good
way.
So I'm going to give it 3.
It's quite a divisive episode, I think. And from everything I've read today, you're not alone in feeling
good.
For various reasons.
Some might say.
Look at John. Look at John nodding away.
Oh, he's getting so excited.
Yes.
John's rubbing his little hands together.
Gaz, what about you? What did you think of episode 2? Because you gave episode 1 5 bloobs, same as me.
It was really good. And Lucy said pretty much exactly what I feel about episode 2 as well. The word that I wrote down was camp. It's
yes,
very camp
yes,
and silly
yeah.
episode, isn't yeah. it? And I'm not sure, like, the production values remain really high, but I felt like some of the directorial choices were a bit of a miss hit as well. Just some of the music kind of took away from scenes rather than complementing them, which it very much complemented what was happening last week, and I felt like it did the opposite here. And yeah, I sort of found myself doubting how seriously I'm supposed to take this show. As Lucy says, like, if that's the premise from the start, if you're like, right, this is a silly show, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But I feel like it wants us to take it seriously, and at times I really couldn't. But like, I still enjoyed what was happening on the screen. It was still good fun. So it's 3 blueberries as well from me.
Fair. And, you know, 3 blueberries is not a terrible score. No,
that's a good score.
But it's 3
blueberries is a good score.
It's above average. John, what about you? You did not enjoy episode one as much as us for various reasons, which hopefully
you've
already listened to. But not as, you know, not a 5 blue. What about, no, what about Whitey's on the moon?
Well, I mean, it was Whitey's, yeah? Because I feel like I've missed.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just having a moment. It's been a long day.
Whitney's on the moon with Fran Critical.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, I mean, right. So after episode one, I was like, whoa, everyone calm down. Yeah. Because now we've got this episode. It might just not be for me. So. Mm. You know, I feel like I'm allowed to give this one. No, I'm not going to give it a 1 bloob. That would be outrageous. No, it's a 2 bloob. The actors they've got are like A-star actors. They're A-listers. They're superstars. And yet they seem so shit in the show. In 2 episodes, we've gone from... All right, so we're just meeting these cats. Oh, he's dead. Oh, okay. I don't even know who he is yet. It's very like episodic. It's like, I feel like each week I'm going to be meeting characters like in the X-Files, where it's like, oh, this man that's like made of glue is a bit mad. Oh, he's dead. That's fine, but that's you can't do it in this. And this episode, like, all right, so they got to the mansion. That's blown up. That's finished now. Next, I was like, fucking hell. This should be like episode 7.
Yeah, it's moving really, like, really
slow
quick.
Slow down.
It's challenging.
I actually think they've done loads of character development in 2 episodes to the point where it's. I think some of these characters are more developed than some of the other shows that I watch, because I think they've done it in an interesting way. But I'll go on to what I think about it. So after reading the book, I was certain that this would be the weakest episode of the season in my mind, because when I read it, I agree. I actually think it comes across as, like Gaz says, as quite camp. As quite silly at times. This whole section is so early on in the book, and you're like, Jesus, man, what? It's done. Like, that feels like it should be like an 8 episode string, or they should have stayed in the mansion for ages. And I do think that adapting this for TV, they should have actually had 2 episodes in this sort of mansion setting. 100%. I think they should have really let it breathe a bit more and had a bit more mystery involved with this element of the show. But they've stuck to their guns and they've gone, hey, right, let's just get this out of the way, because now the show can inherit its true sort of format, which is short stories, anthology, a bit more character, bottle episode-driven episodes. And that's going to be really interesting going forward. And I always thought this would be a problem. I always thought this episode would be a problem. I still enjoyed it personally. I still think it's very interesting tonally. There's a lot of exposition still, and I agree that that is an issue, but they're trying to cram so much lore and stuff into this episode that it makes it very difficult for them not to do this heavy exposition, which I think is a mistake. As I said, I think they should have done 2 episodes in the mansion and let it draw out a little bit more. But, you know, it's got the tone is quite silly and funny and shocking and horrific at the same time. It's a very interesting mesh of feelings that you have watching this show. And I think that's John, when we watch Watchmen, I think that show also has a very weird tone where you I haven't really watched a show since Watchmen, and this is the closest I've come to a tone where I just can't put my finger on it, and there's lots of stuff going on. I still really enjoyed it. I think the effects are still very good. I think the acting's still very good. I think there's a lot of room for growth of this show now from this point onwards. So I'm going to give it a 4 blueberries from me, because I know how difficult it is to interpret this episode. I think they've done a pretty good job considering that what they had to get through, the elements they had to bring into it. because this is all stuff that the themes are going to run throughout the show, but the show is going to completely transform now into something completely different.
Mm. Thanks, Em. I think we said this in the preview podcast, that the way that the book is structured and the fact that they're basing it as an adaptation of that could be a great thing. It could be a massive challenge. I think that they've made a slight misstep, actually. And, you know, Len, you said about making this two episodes. I think it should have been longer. I think that the book it's basically a series of short stories focused around different characters. And the story that we're telling here is basically Atticus's story. But it's essentially, you know, we're nearing the end of what that happens in the book with that. And, you know, we'll talk a bit more about stuff like that in Cthulhu Corner. So I think that it was a little bit, I think for someone who hasn't read the book, it's too rushed. And I think for me, there are parts of it where I thought, that is not how I'll put it on screen. However, you know, you guys use the word camp. Yeah, great. I found the first half of the episode felt like a bit of a romp, and I quite enjoyed it, actually. And I'm not ashamed to admit that I cried at the end, because I was not expecting
I wasn't.
Yeah, and we'll John get onto that we'll get onto that in Cthulhu Corner. Some of the book differences, but the end is very. I thought it was very affecting, considering I talked about the tone. I personally was devastated at the end of the episode. Yeah.
I think also what we'll find when we go through this series is that, you know, the Shonleys will be affected differently by stuff and will react differently to stuff. I'm going to get rinsed out for this, but I agree with you, Len. It's a 4 bloop for me because I still enjoyed it.
Yay.
I think that from a Shonley perspective, I think it's probably a misstep. From my perspective, I'm like, right, well, they're packing everything into one season, here we go. Mm-hmm. I know what's coming.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a little bit different, and it had the opportunity to give me a shock by doing something that I wasn't expecting, and that I think makes for a good bit of telly. Thanks, guys. So a very mixed, and I think I like the fact that we all have different opinions of it.
I sort of wonder whether it's trying to just subvert some expectations at the moment as well. Like, you get a creepy mansion with some creepy people in it, and it's all welcoming, and you expect that that's gonna set up this mystery, and you'd be like, oh, are these guys good or are they bad? What are they? Is this all of their pleasant treatment? Is it nefarious or is it genuine? And you expect that there'll be little bits dropped in over the course of a few episodes, and then you start going, oh no, they're actually bad guys, aren't they? And after about 3 or 4 episodes, you get the big, like, Scooby-Doo reveal, like, oh, they're actually bad guys. But instead, it just immediately goes, right, these are bad people. And that was kind of jarring. But I wonder whether that's the overall aim. Maybe everything is supposed to be slightly different to what we expect from a horror show.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, and that's good. That is good. Like, it's different. Like, I don't, honestly, if they did draw this out over 4 episodes and did that whole Scooby-Doo reveal, Gaz, I'd be like, well, yes, we knew they were evil 4 episodes ago. Why are you drawing that out 4 episodes?
They're wearing capes. Well, look, we've got an opportunity to talk about all of this in much more detail as we go through the plot, and there's a lot of it. But before we do that, I'm going to hand over to Len very briefly for an advert break.
Hello there, advert time here at Lovecraft Country Critical. And what I'd like you to do right now, this second, is if you're listening to this podcast, hit the subscribe button. That's right, very easy to do. Subscribe, all major podcast platforms. That's all you've got to do. If you like the vibe that we're creating here, at Lovecraft Country Critical, then you'll love the vibe over at Fan Critical, our main podcast channel where we post everything. So if you want to hear us review Avengers Endgame, it's on there. How about Joker? That's on there too. How about a series where John and Gaz trawl through Netflix and find the worst things on there and talk about it and laugh about it for about an hour and a half? Yes, those podcasts are very long. Yeah, that's on there too. There's loads of stuff on there, so go check that out. Fan Critical. Once again, all major podcast platforms. And what I will say is we also have a Patreon account, patreon.com/fancritical. And guess what, team? Since last week, we have some new Patreons to shout out. Yes, ooh, you get a shout out. Number one, if you join us on Patreon. At even the most basic tier, you get a shout out. You get access to cast episodes. You can also commission a podcast. That's a tier on there as well. So check that out. I'm going to give a couple of shout outs, team. Are you ready? Ready for some shout outs for some of the Patreons?
Yeah. Dude.
First up, we have Rulu. And Rulu has been listening to us since Castle Rock. They say, hi, y'all. Call me Rulu. Len, I'm in Texas and I say miniatures. Now, that is an in-joke between me and Gareth. Well, I'll get more of that later.
So thank you for that clarification. Yeah. Thank you, Rulu.
Sounds like you're right. I subbed during Castle Rock Season 1 and decided it's time to show my appreciation. You friends, in whatever combination shows up, create my absolute favourite podcast ever. You make me smile, laugh while talking about the shows I love. Thank you.
That's
very nice. Warming. And thank you, Rulu, for becoming a Patreon.
All hail, Rulu.
I hope you enjoy the cast episodes. All hail, Rulu. Yes, very, very, very good. I hope you enjoy the cast episodes because they are pretty good. Mm. Next up, we have Rypai. Rypai has been a regular writer in during some other seasons like Watchmen, Westworld. And it's great to have your support now on Patreon. So thank you very much, Rypai. I don't know your full name. I just know Rypai. That's all I know. So I'm shouting out Rypai.
Going with that, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going with Rypai. So
Rulu and
that's right.
Rypai.
Everyone say thanks.
Have you made these up to make us feel better?
No, this is
definitely not.
Genuine. And finally, Aaron Easton, thank you very much for becoming a Patreon.
That's definitely made up, that one.
Aaron,
that was definitely made up.
Back.
You've jumped the shark now, mate.
The return of Aaron. Or Aaron. I don't know how you want to say your name. Aaron. Thank you for joining Patreon. And thank you for giving us the support once again during this interesting season of Lovecraft Country. We really do appreciate it. So once again, if anyone else would like to become a Patreon, you go to patreon.com/fancritical. On there, you will see all the tiers. The link is in the show notes. Just click on it. Check it out. You don't have to do it. Just have a little gander. See if it's up your alley. If not, don't worry about it. Just listen to us and subscribe. That's fine. And one final thing to say, if you are enjoying this set of podcasts with Lovecraft Country Critical, could you please leave us a review on whatever platform you are listening on? We really love getting those reviews, especially if they're 5 blueberries. Don't be like John. Don't be grumpy. Don't give everything 2 or 3. You know, sometimes give us a 4. Give us a 5. It's fine. You know, we'll accept a 4.
We'll take 2s if they're amusing.
I quite like a 1-star review.
Give us what you want.
I mean, we have had some fun 1-star reviews in the past.
You cowards.
Which, taken out of context, to be honest with you, sound terrible. But I promise you, we are not bad people. We are nice people who mean well. Anyway, Emma, enough garbage chat. Over to you in the studio.
Thank you, Len. Right, so it's time to get into the plot. We've had quite a lengthy discussion already about kind of overall feelings.
Ooh,
and without wanting... pervert. without wanting to, you know, cut anyone off at the beginning, obviously there's great opportunities for us to delve a little bit deeper into the things that we did and didn't like. And I think that the first part of the episode might give us a chance to do that. So we open up with a montage of George and Letty in their, like, wing of rooms in this big mansion, and George is dancing around. He's got fully stocked bookcases. Letty's got a closet full of amazing clothes, and the theme song to the Jeffersons is playing. And this is juxtaposed with Atticus, who is like, what the fuck happened last night? Monsters, awful. We discover that George and Letty don't remember the night before. Lucy, what did you think of our Jefferson's themed montage opening pre-credit?
I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. I felt like they deserved a bit of happiness and a bit of running around. It reminded me of Beauty and the Beast a bit, her like in her nice room with the wardrobes and stuff. Didn't really occur to me at that point that they didn't remember the night Disney. Before. I thought they were just celebrating life, celebrating the fact that they escaped the racists and the monsters. But really, in the scheme of the episode, it just shows it's like maybe an example of how this episode's quite tonally uneven. Because it's maybe a little bit incongruous with the rest of the with the episode. But as an opening, I did enjoy it, and I just wanted George to be happy.
Oh, George. I mean, actually, there's nothing wrong with having a bit of fun. And I actually thought it was good fun. I thought it was a nice way to open it.
They
and sometimes
fun.
Having that real contrast is good. I mean, John, your head on hand. What did you think?
I normally am, to be honest. It started and I was like, what's going on here? Have I missed something? Like, do you mean? I was like, what is this? And why is she so excited about these clothes? But obviously it's loads of character development. She's like, yeah, because I love all these different clothes. And then you've got,
hey,
you
know, I like books. Like,
yeah, I love
books. And I've got
books.
A library of books.
Yeah, that's what all I do. Right. I love my books. So I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. So she likes clothes and he likes books. And obviously you got Tick. He's sitting there and he's stressed out. He goes, I'm always getting stressed out about stuff. It's just what I do. Mm. And they obviously all come together. And I was just a bit like, what's going on here? Why has this happened? And then obviously you find out later on. And the whole, you know, well, they've done this thing. I mean, look, if I woke up and I couldn't remember what happened the night before, and that's happened before, you have that beer fear, don't you? Where you're like, oh, fucking hell, what's happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Weekly.
Yeah. You don't dance around the room.
Yeah. Well, I ruined another engagement
what
drink.
What did I do last night?
It's just like,
what did I do?
Yeah, so you worried, didn't you? So they were a little bit not worried, to be honest.
How'd you feel the day after my engagement drinks?
Absolutely fine. I remember leaving. Good. That was a difference.
You got carried out. You got carried out.
Absolutely not. Yeah. No, some people cheered me.
Nice. That's cheering yourself and everyone else is cowering and
heckling
fear.
Himself.
Gaz, what did you think of the fact that Leslie and George clearly had no memory of what had happened the night before, but Atticus did?
Well, see, that wasn't my reading of it at first, which was a
problem. It took me a while to get
that. Yeah, well, I thought, but I mean, I did think about the night before, and I thought, this is a mental way for them to be acting. Like, they should be like Atticus. I don't understand. At no point did I go, oh, they obviously don't remember, which was maybe a bit silly.
I don't know if you were meant to know, because I didn't, mind you, I'm slow.
No,
so.
I don't think you are supposed to know.
Yeah. Okay.
But obviously later on they tell you, he goes, have you done a bloody spell on them? And she's like, yes. And I was like, what?
Well, can you take it off? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the actual dialogue as well. You done a bloody spell on them, have you? Yes.
You've gone done bloody spell.
Right, okay. Can you not do the spell? Okay.
Yes.
Right.
I can.
Bizarre.
But if I do take off the spell, I have to put on another spell. All right.
Yeah, all right, fine. Yeah. It won't
That's
be a bad
do.
One, will
my,
it?
My character's a bit like that. I like to do spells and stuff. Why have you said character?
When I get a scene of full rear nudity, though. Well, yeah. All right, fine, do it.
Yeah,
that's what happened later.
I didn't love the forgetting spell concept because I didn't love it at first, and then it also seemed to hold very little weight. Like it didn't actually mean anything. Right?
This is an example of where I think this isn't an adaptation. They don't have memory issues in the book, do they? I'm not sure, I don't remember, but
I could have been spelled.
Yeah, and for me, it just felt like if they were going to do this memory loss thing, they should have stuck with it for the whole episode. Instead, like you said, it held no weight. They got rid of it. Like, and it just felt like, why add this element to it? Because already I was watching this episode and I was like, oh God, John's going to hate this. I have that in the back of my mind already. And then the moment they start like doing this forgetting thing, I was like, oh, he's going to fucking hate that as
well. Why does that bother you?
So
just enjoy the show.
Know.
And then
there was a timestamp 2 hours later.
I've always got a little John in the back of my head going, that was a bit stupid. Guilty.
Give it to you, anyway. Blueberries. But to be fair to them, and I will be fair to them here, they had to pad the episode out, didn't they? Because they didn't have enough. So they had to do like magic spells that aren't in the book. Yeah.
But do you think maybe the spell, the whole like memory thing is a kind of a commentary on how black people get gaslit and their experiences are shown back to them, oh, it wasn't that bad, like the microaggressions. Or is it just magic
yeah,
spells?
Yeah, I read an interesting article about this. No, I read an interesting article about this, and it was talking about how it becomes to that point where, like, having trauma that they just sort of think, ah, oh, this, you know, it's just the way it is. We'll just forget about that, brush that off.
Well, we mentioned this in the first episode, didn't we?
Yeah, that happened in the first episode, where it was like, and, you know, me and Gaz spoke about this. That's a commentary on how oppressed their lives are by these fucking disgusting racists. Fine, they've covered that in episode one. Don't try and do the same thing with magic spells. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
Well,
work.
I'm gonna suggest that we leave the magic spells here until we come back to them. So I'm gonna put a spell on all of you to forget your anger at the forgetting spell, and talk about William.
I'm trying to remember Harry Potter one, but I can't remember what it's called. Funnily enough, memory spell.
When you do, Luce.
Expelliarmus.
Len, last week you and I talked about who the bloke was that opened the door at the end of the episode. So in this episode, it is confirmed this is William. And he gives us a brief history lesson of the house. Belonged to a guy called Titus Braithwaite. And I'm pretty sure it should be
Titus,
Braithwaite.
Yes.
I'm just going to call him
That's
Titus.
What
yeah, weird, right?
Yeah.
It's Braithwaite in the audiobook.
Oh, is it? So, okay, fine.
Yeah.
It's an exact recreation of the house that was standing there that burnt down in 1833, killing nearly everyone inside. There are no phones, and members of the lodge are coming for dinner, allegedly. What did you think about William as a character, Len?
Yeah. You know, John said this last week. He's the epitome of, he said he looks a bit shit. He's the epitome of, like, the sort of camp character that I think Gaz and Lucy are alluding to as well. Like, he's very clean cut, like super Aryan in a way, if you get what
100%.
I mean.
Yeah, it's quite clear.
And I thought he was going to be a character called Caleb Braithwaite. Now, I was hoping he wasn't, because I actually really like the character of Caleb Braithwaite. But it seems, Emma, that we're not going to be getting the character of Caleb Braithwaite, because we're going to be
Christina
Braithwaite. Yeah. Which I'll talk about later. So put a pin in that little tidbit and we'll come back to that. William's fine. He's creepy. He appears out of nowhere a lot, which is kind of what happens in the book.
Another Harry Potter.
Hey there. Yeah. And, you know, this whole sanctuary of Ardham, this whole place is just creepy in this weird sort of otherworldly kind of way. And I like the fact that you're getting the backstory about Titus Braithwaite. You'll hear that name a lot more, I'm sure, as the season goes on. There's also other nods to other sort of lodge members. The big issue that I had, actually, was that, once again, I just think this needed two episodes to sort of draw out some of these informational moments, because some of them are very important. And there's a couple of things that get glazed over in this first episode that we'll come on to. Names like Winthrop get completely just shown to you and never really explained, and I'm worried that they've rushed all this a little bit and it's going to be hard to pull it back later on. But overall, the tone of the mansion and the sort of it looks like it did in my mind, if you get what I mean. And
so your mind
thing
got terrible CGI though, because when they panned out and looked at it was shit, wasn't it?
Yeah, the house was,
that was bad.
The house is a bit ropey, but what I will say is they got such a cool location here. It's a shame that, once again, we're not going to see it for a bit more, because it feels like such a cool place. Like, you kind of want to explore it a bit more. But
yeah,
anyway,
totally.
William, weird, creepy, fine. And yeah.
Well, William mentions that he is a close friend of Braithwaite's daughter, Christina, who we've just talked about there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can then put two and two together and realise that she's the one in the silver car. Interesting. But before we get a bit more of that, what we get is exploring a bit more of that environment. And George, Letty and Atticus walk down to, like, I don't know, the Minions land, the village, whatever you want to call
it. The village.
Yeah, so it's a bit Amish-like.
It's very Amish-looking, isn't it?
And then they encounter what I assume to be, like, the village sheriff woman with her dogs.
She looked like a smooth criminal era Michael Jackson. True or
false? What was going on there?
I saw her and I was like, she really looks like Michael Jackson.
Come on.
I think Len touched on it a bit, but I would have liked to have seen a bit more of this creepy village, because they're all dressed like the olden times. And I just think it would have been a bit more interesting to have, I think, Gaz said, like, the mystery of, oh, are they bad or are they good? Because obviously he's been brought here, but it becomes clear with her sort of allusions to the black bears. You know, it's very on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
very on the nose, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is not the best way, I don't think.
Did you say they were dressed as olden times?
Some of them. I saw people dressed walking around with bonnets, I'm pretty sure.
No, you, Lucy, you are right. They're meant to be sort of like Amish. Yeah. Amish, they're an Amish sort of community that live around the mansion.
That would have been more interesting to see more of that.
That's even that's what I mean. Like, it would be interesting. You don't really actually see that much of it in the book. You probably see a little bit more than this, but it's an interesting, weird way that this sort of, you know, this order, this weird cultic order has this little village that also has these weird Amishy type people who raise monsters, apparently. So it is a bit weird.
I think it's, it's interesting.
The Amish are lovely people, by the way.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah. And
slagging them off.
And if there are any Amish people listening to this,
I mean, by definition, there won't be.
No, they can't.
Yeah, they might be breaking the rules. They might be breaking the rules. Come on, guys.
So... after our little sojourn into the village with the lovely, lovely Amish people, or Amish-like people, they head back to the house because they've told they've got to be there for dinner, right? So two things happen on their walk through the woods back to the house. Firstly, George remembers out of nowhere that Atticus's mum was like, oh, yeah, I was descended from a slave that escaped her master's house after a fire. Secondly,
I mean,
loads of monsters turn up.
Yeah,
what's happening here? How have I remembered this?
Can I just say, like, I don't do what Len does and watch everything through the lens of John. But
me too. I was like,
when
John's
George
great.
Said
we all
that,
do it.
My first thought was, oh my god, John is going to hate this.
Yes, why? Why is that the first thought that always comes to our mind? It's fucking annoying. Why is
John
that
is living rent-free in
That's
your head.
Your quality filter. You're sitting there going, that's a bit of shit. So he's going to hate that.
What would John
and
do?
That's fine.
It was poorly placed exposition. Yeah.
What I'll say about this section as well, Em, is I felt this wasn't really needed.
Well, because the second thing that happens is that a load of monsters turn up again, and then Christina turns up and blows a whistle. And I felt...
Yeah.
Them ones again, isn't it?
It was a bit cheap.
I bet it wasn't.
It was a bit silly.
Yeah, I bet it was expensive.
Now, they've used the Demogorgons.
Yeah, I don't think they needed this scene, actually. It's obviously an interesting way to introduce Christina. As I said, in the book, there's a lot more mystery still involved. Like, there's a lot more, like, you know, what was that last night and what was going on? And you don't actually know. You didn't see these monsters. I think to see them again in sort of daylight, in my little air quotation marks, or twilight, is just a bit, like, not as scary. It makes them less scary. It actually makes last week less impactful. Mm. But we'll come on to the whole George remembering thing later on, because that gets very interesting.
I think we can put a pin in that one and come back to it when it becomes a little more
relevant.
So they head back to the house, and this is where we meet Mr. Braithwaite,
Samuel Braithwaite,
who we then find out various different things about. I'm going to summarize them here. Atticus is related to him. They're all related to Titus. He's trying to open a portal to the Garden of Eden, and he basically wants to sacrifice Atticus to do that, to like boost his signal.
Boost his signal.
Yeah, boost his signal to the Garden of Eden. It's been a long day. And Christina tells Atticus a bit of this later on, but we find out quite a lot of things from the dinner. So they all sit down, and there's all of these weird brothers of the Sons of Anarchy or something.
Mm. Sons of Adam.
The Order of Adam.
Thanks, yeah.
What are you doing here?
Uncle George... spoiler warning, RIP, stands up to say, you know, actually, I've been reading some stuff about the bylaws of the Sons of Adam, various different bits of information, blah, blah, blah. Atticus is related to you, so he can order you about. And that's where all of this comes around. Gaz, what did you think of the kind of dinner scenario the whole kind of please eat a piece of my flesh off your plate, and Atticus is descended from Titus.
It's normally the sort of thing that I would be like, oh, I really like this, but it just happened so quickly that I didn't grasp what was happening, to be honest. It was over very suddenly, and it seemed very easy for them to just this big sort of ceremony that they were building up to. They were just like, oh, okay, we'll leave then. And I guess again though, that wasn't the actual point of this episode. And at the time, it just left me thinking, sort of, what is the point of this episode? Where are we going? But that's kind of the recurrent theme, I suppose. I like the story of Atticus being related and what the what the consequences of that are. But again, you know, that could have been done with being stretched out, I think, over a few episodes still. And
yeah,
you know, what is his birthright? And you get hints of it and clues, and he sees that ring, and then you think, oh, what is that ring? Maybe that will be something. Oh no, he's wearing it now. There's no more mystery.
It's a really interesting story, and I hope that we still get to hear more of it. I mean, Lucy, what did you think about the way that Uncle George revealed it in front of everyone, all those stuffy white people?
It reminded me of the Stonemasons episode of The Simpsons when Homer is made.
Yes.
Do you watch anything apart from podcast stuff on The Simpsons?
Remove the stone of shame. Put on the stone of celebration.
It should have been stretched out a bit more. It could have done with that.
We get to another set of scenes where we're focusing on Letty and Atticus and George in various different ways. And it starts initially, it looks like it's going on a bit of a left field turn here. We find out afterwards everybody is having hallucinations. So Letty is getting on with Atticus. George is dancing with a long lost love named Dora. And Dora. Atticus thinks that a woman from the wall.
That's Atticus's mum. Just want to clarify that's Atticus's mum. Dora is Atticus's
mum.
It's
obvious.
Fucking hell.
I think that was going to be expanded on.
Jesus.
You missed it.
Well, I'm just making sure that everyone knows that. Okay.
But
signpost it, put a pin
things,
in that.
Things all go a bit wrong. So Dora disappears. It's all gone wrong for Atticus. And Letty, I think, is getting the worst end of the deal here, because just as Atticus unbuttons his pants, he's got a snake penis. John, what did you think of these hallucinations?
I mean, I was still thinking about who is that actor that is the main guy, like the wizard guy who's now dead now. And I was like, oh, it's the guy from Ghost. He was in Ghost. Yeah. He was the villain in Ghost. I can't wait to see what he's going to do in the rest of this season. So that annoyed me. Again, like a lot of it is very, what's going on here? And then you like halfway through, you're like, right, okay. I mean, everyone's just skitzing out. Honestly, there was one bit where it's like, who's Atticus fight? What is this?
I thought it was intriguing, actually, because I was like, who is this woman and what relationship did they have?
I think these scenes are quite interesting. Now, the interesting part for me about them is the fact that everyone else is watching, like the White Order of Adam are watching this, watching them break down and have these hallucinations. And that is disgusting. And it's this kind of idea of just for their entertainment. And I thought that was a very interesting spin on these set of scenes. Because, you know, I actually thought they were pretty good on their own. And there's a lot to be talked about what they say when they come out of the room and ask about what they all saw. Yeah. But the fact that they were all watching it as well, I think, is a very important sort of added bit of story, which I think just, I don't know, it makes it just a bit more different and interesting than if they're just, we've all seen these sorts of scenes before where they're like hallucinations, but I think this has got an interesting spin on it.
So after this lovely, disturbing bit of voyeurism, Letty, George and Atticus decide to go and rescue Montrose, Atticus's dad, because they think he's in the bottom of that big tower, right? Which seems logical. And as they're going down and they're trying to get him out, he crawls out of the ground. He's got out himself.
It's funny, this.
It was quite funny. It was a bit weird, and he is a bit of a knobber, isn't he? Lucy, we haven't really talked much about like Montrose and their relationship in this episode. What did you think of his appearance for the first time, really, in the show?
Omar from The Wire.
Well, yeah, 100%. It's Michael K. Williams. So, yeah,
that was my first thought.
He is an absolutely brilliant actor, and such a coup to get him to do this show.
I thought it was good the way he kind of burst out of the ground, because you might have been thinking maybe he's dead, and then it's like he returns to life through the ground.
Zombie.
A bit of Shawshank looking at the excavated dungeon. But yeah, he's a prick, really, isn't he? He's not very... I mean, we know there's been a bit of character development with Atticus and his father, you know, they didn't have a good relationship whatsoever. And when he says, "I didn't think you'd be stupid enough to come," it's like, right, great, well... I'm here trying to save you. Gratitude costs nothing.
I think Montrose is such an interesting character. He is by far one of the more complicated characters in the show. And his relationship with Atticus is something that's very well detailed in the book. But he's got a lot of room for growth. Like, there's a lot with his character that hopefully we'll see him maybe soften over the season.
He's turned up a lot earlier than I thought. I thought that the show would be about, we've got to get my dad back. He's somewhere, and episode 8 we found him, not straight away he's here replacing Uncle George.
The season could have...
I love that moment where he just bursts out of the ground and then they're like, "Hey, Montrose."
Yeah. See, now that was fun. Like,
what the fuck are you
that
doing?
That was funny fun, wasn't it? I mean, like,
yeah,
the season could have ended after 2 episodes, to be honest, because now they get in a car and go to escape. Could have been over. And they're driving away, they're speeding around, Letty's getting the handcuffs off Montrose, and then they crash into an invisible force field. Gaz, what did you expect this? What did you think about this?
Do you know what? Really annoyingly, I, like, turned away to top up my drink at the moment that the crash happened. So I had no sort of like, "Oh my God, what's just happened?" Yeah, that's it. Keep your eyes on the road. Lesson for us all. So the moment of shock was probably lost on me, unfortunately.
Well, we had another bit of a shock in this part as well, where the Braithwaites turn up and Elder Braithwaite shoots Letty in the gut. Now,
Samuel.
Did anybody here, like me, feel some serious emotion going on?
I'll tell you what I thought. My thought was, there's no way that she's dying here. Like, that'd be ludicrous.
You know, I thought that about George, but, you know, shit happens. Like, this scene has been changed from the book.
Yeah.
The gut shot to Letty is a genuine gut punch to anyone who's read the book. Because it don't happen.
It was a shock.
I was like, "Oh fuck, maybe they are going there." You know, they might start killing off some characters that we thought they might not. So maybe it's something they're trying to subvert people who've read the book's expectations. And I can say that towards the end of the episode, that is confirmed that they are doing that.
Mm. All this time you've invested in these characters, and then they go and take one of them away. You'd be like, "Oh mate, I'm gutted." Do you know what I mean? No.
Yeah,
it's episode 2, for fuck's sakes.
I cared about George.
Okay.
Once again, heart of stone.
I'm sure he's a lovely guy. You know, absolutely fine.
You know he's a lovely guy, and you know he likes a bit of bedroom shenanigans.
And he likes books.
Loads about him. Mm. And he likes books.
Going, "Well, look, he might be my son as well." Why are you telling me that now? Stop saying that.
I would have cared. I just didn't buy that Letty was going to die here.
Same.
Yeah, I think there was a kind of a sense of unreality of it. I think it felt a bit...
Yeah.
It felt too quick. And actually, even from my perspective, I didn't think they'd do that. Mind you, they've now done something else. But anyway.
Exactly.
This leads us on to kind of, I suppose, the peak of the episode in terms of... drama of one variety or another, because we realise that actually, you know, what they want to happen is they want to get Atticus into this ceremony, which we kind of knew. So we sort of, there's a bit of a, you know, you choose which one. Elder Braithwaite shoots one of them, we later find out it's George, and he makes a promise that he'll heal Letty and George if Atticus takes part in this ceremony. So then we get, he's being washed by some nice Amish ladies, get a full rear nudity shot, which I'm not going to complain about. And then we get Christina sitting in a chair, just staring at Atticus and having a chat, pretty chilled, putting a ring on his finger. Interesting. I mean, Lucy, this is where we start getting a bit sort of Wizards of Waverly Place type.
That's a good show.
Thing. Yeah. what did you think of the kind of lead up to the ceremony?
Yeah, more silliness. I mean, I don't think we mentioned it, but when the guys were trapped earlier and when he was doing Morse code and it just spelt out wizards, I was like, oh God, yeah. this is a bit silly.
Nah, but like, that's how would you describe it? How would you describe it? What are you going to put on the Morse code? Seriously,
but again, I hate these guys.
It's a dual meaning, isn't it? Like we've had before, because it's talking about Grand Wizards and the Clan.
Exactly.
No, I know. I'm aware of the symmetry between them. It's just the way it was done. I thought the ritual would be a bit more graphic, like when you see him having his liver cut out or whatever. The Grand Wizard. But it was all a bit Buffy, wasn't it?
With very good effects. Yeah. I will say the effects are very good. So, I mean, Buffy does not have good effects. That's a fact.
Buffy was filmed 30
practical.
Years ago.
I agree that this is the bit that's very difficult to translate, because, as I said, this episode
was written in French.
There's a lot of supernatural stuff. But once again, when I was reading it, I was like, oh, John's not going to like this. Why is that in my head all the
time?
Don't
worry about me, mate. Just, you know, you're going to give it 4 blues minimum anyway, whatever happens. So
I enjoy this sort of stuff. I just said I like Buffy, so just, yeah. What I will say is that this was always going to be difficult to translate. And like I said, they've got through it now. But this whole sequence is very interesting for several reasons. We'll talk about Whitey on the Moon in Cthulhu Corner. And how it relates to the whole episode in a very interesting way. We'll also discuss some other little bits and pieces. But I thought the idea that, obviously it's mentioned earlier in the episode, that Titus Braithwaite in the 1800s, I think it was, or late 1700s, tried this ritual and failed, which resulted in the destruction of the manor and the escape of Atticus's great-great-great-grandmother, right, who escaped whilst pregnant. So it's important to note they're trying to do the same ritual here now. Samuel Braithwaite believes that he now has a better grasp of natural philosophy, as they call it in the
Clearly
book,
not
to do this to do this ritual. And yes, you are right. It's glazed over. It is also very glazed over in the book. But there is obviously more internal narrative from Atticus's perspective. A couple of things to note: the ring from Christina. I'm interested to know if you think that she sabotaged this ritual. Everyone, is that what you think happens here?
I'm not sure, because she's the one that kind of brings
him. Or did you not pick up on that?
She's the one that kind of gets him there by saving them.
Yeah, but she's the interesting thing is
that obviously in the book, I've already mentioned that it's Caleb Braithwaite. It's a boy who is the heir to the Braithwaite. This is an interesting subversion from them, because I think what they're trying to do, and I think what Misha Green's trying to do, is to say that women are also marginalised in this time. That and there's that conversation between Christina and Atticus when Atticus gets the ring and she says, the only reason you get this is because of that. And he says, and I'm a black man too. And they're trying to sow this element of Christina feels slighted, that she doesn't get the opportunity to, you know, inherit the Braithwaite sort of natural philosophy, grand wizard, whatever you want to call it, situation.
Poor little white girl.
So she sabotaged this ritual. She sabotaged this ritual because the ritual was working. And then if you notice, the ring is the thing that changes the ritual for the worse. So put a pin in that, and I'm sure it will come back.
Someone keeping track of these pins.
Too many pins.
I'm making a list of the pins, don't worry. I'll burn it after this. So it all goes wrong. The mansion falls apart, Atticus gets out, and that's all we need to say about that, I think.
Chasing an apparent vision.
Grandmother vision, which is, you know,
yeah,
I
that's
think it's
good.
Interesting.
That's very
I
good.
Think it's, and it starts to tell his story. And then we come to the culmination of the episode, and Letty runs to Atticus, hugs him, and they have a really, really interesting moment that I just wasn't getting. I thought it might have been, you know, Snape Schlong again, but clearly not. Because actually, when they get back to the car...
Why are you always thinking about Snape Dick?
Because it was really traumatising. But then they get back to the car, and this is more traumatising. George is dead. And that whole scene, it was a shock. I wasn't expecting it. I got really emotional by it. And it was Atticus.
Does that mean it doesn't happen in the book?
Yes, correct.
It does not happen in the book.
So I don't think we'll come back to that.
We do not lose. George is a very important character. Like, I think, as I said this in the previous podcast, he's probably my favourite character in the story. And I could not believe it. I could not believe they'd done it. It was a real gut punch. And I get that, John, I understand, as a Shonley and as someone who's only seen two episodes, I think George definitely comes through the best out of all of those characters in the two episodes. But for someone who loves the character, I was absolutely heartbroken here.
I'll give you an example, Len. So for people that haven't read A Song of Ice and Fire, their affinity with a certain, I won't use his name just in case people haven't seen it, but I'll call him Harrison Bellamy. So, you know, so that's the code, you see. Now, I love
the
him.
Finest swordsman
absolutely
in the
love
land.
Him. Yeah. And, you know, something happens to Harrison, Mr. Bellamy.
Poor Harrison.
In
the
show. And it's like, oh, what the fuck? I was gutted. I was devastated, angry, if anything. I was like, how the hell have they done? How dare they do this to this, you know, legendary man, Harrison Bellamy?
Harrison Bellamy, yeah.
Yeah. But then let's just say there are other people that haven't read the books or watched the show that were just a bit like,
that's all right.
Just a bit old and shit.
But that, I think, is what's interesting.
Who's this guy? Mm. Who's Harrison Bellamy? Who cares, man?
But I think between us,
I know, Harrison Bellamy's great.
It's interesting to have some of us that have read it and some of us that haven't, because then you get that difference of reaction. Like, Lucy hasn't read it, but she was taken by surprise.
If he died in episode 2 of season 1. You'd be like, okay, I can't even remember him.
This scene was... It confused me a bit, and not necessarily in a bad way, though. This was when he escaped. I thought, oh God, he's run into some sort of past. Like, I thought that he was following his great-great-great-grandmother into the past.
Interesting.
And and then obviously it was only when Letty's like,
that'd have been good.
Tick. That I was like, right, just in regular times. And then I thought maybe that's why all the Sons of Adam, or whatever they call themselves, that's why they've turned to stone as well, because I thought they've messed around with time.
That's really interesting.
Gone back
actually,
to before they were born, so they were made of stone. Obviously that isn't what happened, but as soon as Letty gives Atticus that look, I was like, George is dead.
I didn't see that's so weird. I just didn't read it at all until he went to the car.
But maybe because
I wasn't expecting
it. You really weren't expecting it, because you're like, yeah, well, I know George survives this whole thing, whereas I don't know that George survives the whole thing.
We've obviously neglected to mention here that Letty's been healed and she's not dead. I realise I didn't say that, which is what we assumed would happen to George, but it hasn't.
I'm pretty certain that George is perma-dead, unfortunately.
Do you know what I was expecting in that bit? We've kind of skipped over the dialogue between the brothers, where he's like, you know, look, you know, he's not necessarily your son, right? It could be mine. He's like, look, we said 30 years ago, or however long, let's just not speak about that again. It's quite upsetting, to be honest. I was expecting him to go to the car and be like, oh no, my uncle's dead. And for his dad to go, well...
Actually, he's your dad.
He might not...
Oh, wow, yeah.
He might not be your uncle. He might actually be your dad. And then... For it to be that on the nose and then just end. And I'd be like, oh, fucking hell, why has he done that?
John, also, just what we didn't pick up on, there's a conversation between George and Dora earlier this episode where they talk about Tulsa. And I know that Tulsa is a big moment in the Watchmen series. And just to say that it will also probably have a lot of relevance to this series, it's actually mentioned several times in the book. So it'll be interesting to see if that relationship in Tulsa is explored in a flashback sort of scenario in any way, shape or form. That'll be really interesting to see.
Watchmen flashback. That was good.
Yeah, just use the Watchmen flashback. I mean, it was amazing.
Those
sequences are great.
I think that gives us a good in-depth conversation around the plot itself. So I think that it would be a good time for us to trundle over to Cthulhu Corner.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Cthulhu Corner. Now, in the first episode, we actually had a load of references to talk about. This week, less so. It's a bit more broad. There's a couple of moments here or there. Lovecraft is actually takes a bit of a backseat at times here, unless you want to talk about the Shoggoths again. But we did that last week, so let's not worry about that. Although, I just thought about this in my head. They were weirdly, we didn't talk about this, born from a cow.
Oh, yeah.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, what was that?
That was weird.
Don't worry about
it. Why is that happening?
Never be mentioned again.
I think it's a... Anyway, don't worry about that. I think that's a moment to try and humanize Christina in a way, which is a weird way to say that you're trying to humanize her when she's cradling a demon spawn. But, you know...
Have you never done this before? No, I haven't. Why are you doing it now? No. Are you not busy tonight? Who's...
John, the question is, who's ever done that before?
Isn't there
what
that
is going on there?
Anyway, going on? Nah, baby.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a section of the episode here but we didn't really touch on, so it's good that we're going to talk about it now, which is where George discovers a secret passageway where he finds the bylaws of the Order of Atom, and he finds the rules that, you know, this is where he finds the rules that Atticus has the power to demand everyone to leave the room. He's a true descendant of Titus Braithwaite. But the book that he pulls out, and this is probably what Gareth wants to talk about for some reason, because he's trying to get in on my Cthulhu Corner action, is The House on the Borderlands. Okay, and it's got a very interesting story, and George actually mentions a bit of the story in the episode, and I know that will have piqued Gareth's interest, and it definitely piqued my interest, because the story sounds ridiculously horrific and Lovecraftian in a way, doesn't it, Gareth?
Well, it does, because and that's no coincidence. William Hope Hodgson, who wrote it, is one of the key inspirations for Lovecraft. He was a huge fan of Hodgson's work. I'm sure if you want to describe the story, you'll see some of the
connections. So it's a 1908 novel, so obviously 30 years before, or 25 years before Lovecraft or whatever. And I'm going to summarize the story, like similar to what George does, because it's terrifying sounding, but also very interesting sounding. People on this Irish island find this recluse's journal in this abandoned and destroyed large house. And the diary recounts the recluse as he acquires the house with his dog. And then he decides to keep a diary to record all of the strange happenings that are going on in the house. He then gets transported to another dimension at times called the Plane of Silence, where he sees gigantic demon creatures and swine things, as he calls them. And John will like those because they're pig people. And it seems like the kind of thing. See, that's the kind of thing that if I were to watch it and there were pig people, I'd go, John loves this. Mm. So that's the difference.
That's
what goes on in my mind.
More of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I noted a couple similarities to the story of what's going on here. That obviously the strange happenings in the house is obviously literally what's going on in this episode. Other dimension. Now, this is something that I'm sure will be explored as we go throughout the season, but you even see a glimpse of it when they're trying to get to this alternate dimension or plane where Eden and the era of creation and eternity is still an option for them, and that's what the Order are trying to do here. So I thought that was very interesting. Anything you want to add to that, Gareth?
I've never read this, but I really want to after reading up on it. This plane of silence, it sounds terrifying. So it's this gigantic plane surrounded by giant mountains.
Monsters.
And on each of those mountains is like a sort of beast god representation on it. And then I think in the middle of the plane is a weird sort of glowing green version of the house that's in real life. It just sounds
I
so
I have read this.
Cosmic horror. I love it.
Because the pigs are ringing a bell.
Oh, really?
And the house, like in Ireland.
Swine things, I mean.
It's either you've read this book or you've seen Willow, where they all turn to pigs at the end.
Spoiler warning for Willow.
Gaz, I was going to ask, doesn't Lovecraft write a story that's basically a carbon copy of this, apart from the pigs, where there's like, there's a guy in the woods who's writing him letters and he's really ostracised and there's weird things in the night, and then like the elder ones or something put his brain in a pot?
I think he describes it slightly more evocatively
shit,
than
it,
that.
Honestly, it just sounds shit.
I can't tell you all of
hey,
it.
Hey, Gaz, isn't there this story with Lovecraft and brain pot?
Nah, because they put his brain in a pot and that. Yeah, I mean,
oh, don't put me brain in there. Nah, that's what we do. We're pig people. What's he chewing? He's on his own.
I'm glad I didn't make it.
I mean, unbelievable.
Some of these descriptions, I would love to see some kind of representation of that in the show. But
yeah, make a film with that. Yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. Let's talk about, there's a lot of religious connotation in this episode. We obviously, it's all about the Book of Genesis, talking about Adam and Eve, and how at the Book of Names is mentioned here, which is essentially the when, you know, the universe or Eden was created, that Adam was literally putting everything in its place and giving a name to everything. And that is the state of things that the Order want to achieve again. They believe that everything has got that is sort of defying nature's natural order, and they are trying to put everything back in its natural place or return themselves to a time when they have the option to do that. And that is very key. They believe that they are trying to restore balance to the universe.
Idiots.
In a way.
Put their brains in a pot.
So you've got like the Book of Genesis, you see the paintings, a lot of the music used in this episode has religious connotations, so that was very interesting to me. Obviously glazed over in a very compact 1 hour episode, so I'm hoping we get more tidbits of what the Order are trying to achieve throughout the season, and I'm sure we will get moments of that. Now let's talk about Whitey on the moon, not Whitney on the moon, which is what Emma called it. This is a 1970 spoken word poem by Gil Scott Heron. And the way this is used over the sort of ritual at the end of the episode was a very interesting choice to me at the time. But then when I like thought about it more, I think it's actually very, very well done, because the whole poem is criticizing the US sort of government for prioritizing like things like the US space program, and essentially saying that it didn't use its government funds to help people in poverty, and how it marginalized a lot of Black Americans at the time. And if you look at the episode, essentially that is happening entirely throughout the episode. I know you joked about it at the start, but Letitia at the start of the episode dancing around with the clothes, like, is trying to show that disparity, and George with the very nice books is trying to show the disparity between the poverty that they're sort of coming from, the poverty they're coming from, to the sort of rich, the disparity in sort of wealth there. Also, during the seance at the end, you could see this as the white people trying to do their moon landing, if you get what I mean, like go to another world. At the expense of Tick, and you know, it's very interesting way of looking at it. I actually thought it was an inspired choice to do that. I mean, what did you guys think?
I thought the like the atmosphere it created with that over the ritual was really effective.
Yeah,
despite you know,
Totally disagree. Like in the sense that lyrically it was a really like it worked really well. And I think that's probably what's important, but just audibly, it doesn't. You know, it might just be subversion of expectations, but this is some kind of culty ritual going on. I want to hear like rather than like this sort of cool.
Yeah, there was some of that.
It's interesting. It's interesting. I really don't want to hear that because I'm so bored of that in literally every form of And I think we talked about this, like, they're doing different things, Gareth. Like you said, they're subverting expectations. Well, they're like,
I just found it making a big... It just sounded a bit jarring.
We're two episodes in now where they're taking, you know, a text from, I think this is like 30 years later, and placing it in a different time. Like, it's two episodes. They've done it two episodes in a row now. So I don't think they're doing anything different. I sort of wonder, is that just going to be the through text in every episode?
Yeah, maybe. Interesting. That's an interesting point. It will be... This is the thing that I'm going to find really interesting, and we're going to move on to feedback in a second. But I think it's fascinating to see what... I would love to... I can't wait to talk to you guys in like another eight episodes time, or six episodes or whatever, and go, okay, now what do you think in hindsight? Because I think there's a lot that is going to change after this week's episode. But should we move on to some feedback? Because we have some good points to talk about.
Because I know that somebody we really love hearing from is back this week, and I'm really excited.
Well, why are you spoiling it? First of all, we have an email from RyPi, our new Patreon.
Hello, RyPi.
Hi, RyPi. They have this to say: love your podcast. Listening to all of you dissect shows and movies brings me great joy. I especially enjoy the witty banter and irreverence on display from all of you each week. Irreverence is probably in a nod to John. Okay.
Witty banter certainly isn't.
Ooh, that's irreverent.
Definitely
is.
Not. I really like the use of modern music within the show. I know that was an issue brought up last week, but I believe they had a nice blend of modern and old-timey tunes throughout the show. If the live music scene had the women perform a hip-hop song, that would have been totally jarring. But I think they presented a nice blend of modern and antiquated sounds. Which brings me to my second point, appealing to multiple audiences. Although it was quite funny hearing you poke fun at the use of the phrase multiple audiences, this indeed is a valid point, and one which I believe HBO is actively attempting to accomplish. They go on to say, unfortunately, the American public education system is controlled by a very small number of conservative states. As amazing and idiotic as it sounds, local school boards within states such as Texas and Florida decide which subjects and topics are allowed in history books. The reason? Money. The textbook makers want to sell the states with large populations, and for them to create separate history books for states with liberal governments is not cost effective. Some books literally say that some slaves were happy. Occurrences like Tulsa Massacre are not in textbooks at all. The concept of sundown towns and the dangers of simply traveling in America as a person of color have been completely stripped from the classroom. They state that our Civil War was caused by states' rights, not slavery. I could go on, but you get the gist. Aside from simply being great entertainment, shows such as Watchmen and Lovecraft Country are performing a much-needed educational service for the vast swathes of idiots that populate the United States of America. Remember, this is a place where service workers are regularly assaulted for asking COVIDiots to please wear a mask inside their store. Sometimes it feels like I'm already living in Lovecraft Country. Keep up the great and much-needed entertainment. Well, that's a very interesting piece of feedback, and something obviously we don't know, because, you know, not having gone to school or the public education system in America, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's beautifully written great email insight as well. So thank you, RyPi. But yeah, it's mad to think. I mean, you can't learn everything at school, obviously, but if you're not learning your own history, and I know that's been a topic of discussion in this country as well with recent events, you know, you're condemned to repeat the less savoury aspects of it, I guess. So I'm glad that they are taking something from this show that maybe we're not, because we're not brought up in that environment. But yeah, very interesting feedback.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. And John, I know, and Gaz, we talked about the Tulsa race riots in the Watchmen podcast. Mm. And it's interesting to see the second sort of HBO major show now also trying to shine a light on that. And I'm sure, as I said, hopefully they try to shine more of a light on that in the following weeks. Next up, we have an email from Irv Parchman. And Irv, you have tickled us. You have tickled us because you wrote, "Hi, Emma, John and Lynn." And that has tickled the group. Lynn, spelled L-Y-N-N. I am Len, L-E-N.
No, you're Lynn now.
But I will say that provided the biggest...
you are Lynn.
If we had a biggest laugh of the week segment, that would definitely take biggest Lynn. Laugh of the week. I'm probably going to be called Lynn now 100%. For the rest of time by these guys.
It's better than Ken.
Irv has this to say. I found your podcast while searching for good podcasts about HBO's Lovecraft Country. I'm glad I did. I like the preview materials and your review of episode one. Let us know what you think about episode two of a mixed bag here. Fan critical, it's safe to say. One thing I'd like to point out, which wasn't mentioned, the first reference to the expensive silver car is made by the owner of the local bar Montrose used to frequent. The bar owner told Atticus the last time he saw Montrose, he met with a man in a silver car and left with him. So I'm wondering if Montrose is now living in the Arden Mansion.
Correct.
Guess what? They went for all that in this episode because, as I said, they crammed it all in. But it's interesting, you know, we didn't mention that last week. We did sort of glaze over the silver car. And I'm still
we also glazed over Christina. The guy was he was getting a blowjob, wasn't he, from another guy when that happened.
Yeah, we did glaze over that. I mean that was a weird scene, just thinking about
it. I was just like, what's going on here?
It was a bit mad.
Yeah.
That was a bit mad. Good, why good have point, they put John. That in? But yeah, left with a man in a silver car.
So
I think left with a woman in a silver car is probably maybe what they said. I need to go back and watch that. But in the book, that's similar again. They do go to the bar and they do find out about the car. So yeah, we did glaze over that. So thanks very much for your email, Irv. Let us know your thoughts on this week. Be interested to know everyone's thoughts on this week. You can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. Next up, we have a returning character. That's right. Toddy B is back.
Yay.
He's not a character, is he?
No, he's a character that I've made up. We definitely haven't made him up. You know, Toddy B exists.
To support everything I say.
He says, hey guys, glad to be chatting again.
What would he do that, guys? How's it going? He's not me.
That's his catchphrase.
Yeah.
Hey guys, glad to be chatting again and hope that you all have had a healthy and safe few months.
Thanks, Toddy.
Yeah, I think we have.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Todd. Should be noted, I've not read the book, so the whole story is new to me. A few thoughts on the first two episodes. Episode one, I think they set the scene perfectly and it had me very interested in how they were going to tell the story in the coming weeks. I understand John's frustration with the exposition-heavy dialogue, but when the show is that intriguing, I can look past it, especially when it's trying to world-build. Score for the first episode?
Five blueberries.
Yes,
five
Todd.
Blueberries. Oh! Yeah. Take that, John. Right, shove that up your pipe and smoke it.
Fucking hell. Lynn and Todd.
Episode two continued the strong performances from Jonathan Majors, Journey Smollett and Courtney B. Vance. I was utterly baffled and confused for the majority of this episode, but for some reason it really worked for me, and especially found the last 10 minutes wildly entertaining. The only few complaints I have is that with so much thrown at you as a viewer, you feel overwhelmed with what the fuck moments at times. But I also found in the first 20 minutes it felt very choppy and hard to follow. However, four blueberries.
Wow.
That's
yes,
right,
Todd.
Me and Toddy B on the same page this season. All right. All in all, I love the fact they aren't shying away from the craziness and going all in. I look forward to hearing back from you all and have a great week.
You're letting yourself down, TB. You're letting yourself down.
Look, I think it's safe to say that the episode is a bit choppy, as we know, but it is entertaining. Like, the thing is, there's a lot going on there, and I found it thoroughly entertaining. Okay, and that's it for feedback this week, because we're running a bit long. But if you please do let us know your thoughts, you can email us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. That's at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. The email address is also in the show notes, so just follow it on there. You can let us know anything. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if you disagree with John. Let us know if
you disagree with me.
You know, I don't care if you disagree with me. Just live your lives. Do you know what I mean?
He does care. He really cares. I get
texts late at night
where it's like, why are people saying this about me?
As you wish to. You know, if you wanna watch a show where people are like, "Oh, I've done magic spell and I can't remember anything," yeah, fuck it, five bloobs. You know, if that's what you like,
whoever you agree,
I make no bones about it.
Whoever you agree or disagree with, you can let us know also on social media. So if you wanna get in touch with us on Twitter, we are at @FanCriticalPod. If Instagram, @Fan_Critical, or just Fan Critical on Facebook. And that email address, again, in case you haven't written it down or memorized it, is in the show notes, but it is also fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, I can't remember.
What is it? Thank you.
What can't I remember?
Thank you, Len, for this week's Cthulhu Corner. We talked about...
Expelliarmus.
About most of the... I don't think that's Expelliarmus. That's not that spell. We talked about most of the book differences discussion as well. But I think, you know, as you said, we've had a lengthy conversation. So I would just like to say thank you.
Snake lengthy.
And he's annexed. He's annexed bloody Lovecraft Lounge after one episode. Oh no, we can't have somebody else giving some information.
Hey, I gave you some lines this week, didn't I?
Well, I hope everyone's enjoyed the last time that Fan Critical will all be together on a podcast after this disaster.
I will be introducing Worst Line of the Week, stealing that.
Yes, do it.
Yeah, stop stealing my line.
Worst Line of the Week was one of my favourite segments of Watchmen and also...
Castle Rock, I think.
Yeah, it was good. I love that. Yeah, let's get
we did
back.
It on Westworld.
Yeah, it was Westworld. Worst Line of the Week.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Well, look, I mean, we've all got new sections. Lucy, have a think this week. What do you want to bring? We will be back next week for episode 3. And if you have enjoyed this, please...
Lucy's segment is Simpsons related. It's
what episode of the Simpsons is this related
to? Moment of the episode to the Simpsons.
What is this reference in the Simpsons?
Simpsons segment. We've got Cthulhu Corner, Lovecraft Lounge,
Let's
Simpsons
just not
segment,
talk about
and Worst
the
Line of the Week. Let's
do
let's
those
go.
Segments instead.
And then just me trying to keep everyone under
please.
Control.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
Just quickly, The House on the Borderlands. I haven't read it, but I listened to an audiobook. So I'll share the link with people in the group if you want. I can put it on Discord.
Yes, please.
Oh,
yeah,
thank you.
Nice idea.
For our
thanks,
Patreons.
Mm. Oh, thank you. Yes.
And if you love all of that stuff, get yourself onto patreon.com. /fancritical.
On Discord.
Yeah.
Bootleg.
And we'll all be back next week. So thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
John.
Yeah.
Gaz.
See ya.
Thank you.
And Len. And we'll see you all next week.
I think you'll find it's Lynn. I think you'll find it's Lynn.
Bye, Lynn.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. The accent every week.
That's what Lynn would say.
Your Lynn.
Bye.